justice upon the corruption of the time. We find day by day our moral system is being lowered. Little by little, we are removing the Ten Commandments. We are also destroying the statute of common friendship. We are endangering our health. We are becoming psychoneurotics and narcotic addicts, and the whole world is locked in confusion and discord among the parts of itself. Now, this cannot be regarded as a success, nor can we cover it all with the great, big, beautiful term progress. The progress is here. And incidentally, if we want to follow it deeply enough into Aristotle or some of the Egyptian mystics, what we are in now is progress, real progress, because it's so bad we can't keep at it. Progress is therefore going to be through a great disillusionment, followed perhaps by the most difficult times physically that humanity has had in the last 10,000 years. Progress, then, must come in with repentance. It must become man waking up to the realization of his mistake and changing himself. And this is the last thing he wants to do. He wishes to continue to do it well only if it pleases him. He will accept very little of the Ten Commandments today. He is consistently breaking all of them. He is doing it, however, because it is expedient. Also, he is probably reaching a point where he doubts very seriously whether these Ten Commandments mean anything. But he has failed to look around him. Every commandment that he breaks leaves a monument of tragedy behind it. Every bit of selfishness that we exercise adds to our own pain. And for a few hours or a few days of comfort, we sacrifice a lifetime of integrity. So day by day, we are realizing, more than perhaps any other generation, that we stand in the face of a change that must be accomplished. Now, many people probably will never try to accomplish it. Perhaps the death rate will take care of some of them. But we are also unhappy over the fact that young people growing up have not had greater opportunity to discover the values of life. We are now locked again in the same old struggle as to whether religion should be taught in the public schools. I think if we think of religion as the conflict of creeds, it should not be taught in the public school. We cannot teach sectarianism because it's not the materialist who is going to prevent it, but the sectarians themselves. They are not going to cooperate or permit anything to be taught that is at variance with their own particular sect, whatever it may be. Therefore, rather than take a chance of losing dominance for their own group, they are willing to sacrifice the religious training for all the others. Now, this is a mistake, of course, but it arises primarily from the fact that we have a very poor definition of religion. If we want to consider religion as divided into packages, and these are neatly arranged on racks, it is possible to realize that we might fear that somebody will open the wrong package. But if we believe in religion as it was believed in antiquity, as the manifestation of man's respect for the divine plan of which he is a part, there is no reason why certain religious instruction is not possible in our educational system. It is a matter of transcending sectarianism and getting down to the basic needs of life. Now, we may also point out that it is quite possible to discuss religion and teach it on a philosophical, historical basis. It is not necessary to go into the Clash of Creeds. It is not necessary to become involved in all the squabbles of the ages. All that is really necessary is to recognize that there is a universal integrity, that this can be demonstrated from history and from experience, and that the individual is entitled to know something about that part of human culture which has dominated and directed it constructively since the dawn of time. There's no more reason why the great religious philosophies of the world should be ignored than that we should take the banking system out of education. Education is to know what our world is, why it functions the way it does, and how we can do something about it if it functions badly. And every child is entitled to this instruction from the beginning of his educational life. Instead of that, we are so afraid that education might be idealistic and interfere with the economic advancement of a few groups that we take this long chance, which is very, very wrong. Now, if we are interested to find out the prophets of our time, what it's all about, all you do have to do is to listen to the reports of the various investment councils and to learn the opinions of outstanding economists. And the economist today has taken the place of the Isaiahs of yesterday. Today it is the economist who solemnly pronounces what's going to happen to Bethlehem Steel or to Chrysler Motors. These are important discoveries. What is happening to the human being in these patterns is neatly ignored. Everything and every emphasis is upon the protection of an economic system at all cost. Well, it should be protected. We all need it. But how are you going to protect an economic system if you don't do something to make people honest? How are we going to have an honest economy in the hands of dishonest persons? How are we going to solve any problem involving the survival of any constructive institution if we do not find the causes that are undermining it and destroying it through selfishness, arrogance, and ambition? So we have the very definite problem of trying to decide where our values lie. The average person today is probably willing to kind of make a certain compromise. He would like to have religious instruction. He might very definitely send his children to Sunday school. He may go to church himself. He would like to have the experience of feeling good inside himself. He would like to have the happy fact that he is inwardly secure. But the result of this situation is very difficult for him. Back in the days when the principles of things were laid down, it was pointed out definitely that only the individual who carries the responsibility of his own place in the plan can be a good citizen. Any individual who puts his own advantage above the common good is a bad citizen. And yet on that basis, we have too many bad citizens who think they are good citizens. We think we're a good citizen if we maybe help a few people in trouble. We think we're a good citizen if we try to vote without having very much knowledge about any of the candidates. We feel we are good citizens if we pay our taxes, even though we resent them. All of these are great expressions of integrity, but the integrity lies much deeper than that. Our integrity comes from the one great pattern which we must restore. Namely, that the great text of our lives, the great system by which we must all live, is indicated in the great operations of universal law. Laws of human beings must be part of a universal law that is greater. When human law conflicts with divine law, human law is ultimately going to lose. Therefore, we must try to find out what is necessary to our survival and then do it. This sounds very easy, but in truth, it is very difficult. It is very difficult because of the tremendous confusion of ulterior motives. We are not really in a position to strike out clearly and honestly to the support of our various beliefs. So we don't try to transfer the leadership of life from the obedience to natural law to the development of a successful, enduring economic system. We want to have an economy that will go on and on. We want to have a financial estate in nature and in space. that will protect the futures of ourselves and our children and their children. We want to go on in a world in which everyone has an opportunity to be an individual and have constructive attitudes. We have all these thoughts definitely in our minds. We believe in them. We want them to happen. But we are not working in that direction very enthusiastically. We are not able to correct the basic fact, faults. Yet today there is a group arising that tells us that if the nuclear armament situation is not curbed, there may not be any world left for us to give on to our children. This, I think, is untrue. While I believe there is a grave danger in these things, I do not think that anything that man can create will destroy the world. But it will destroy himself, and it will break down the structures which he has built at the expense of his own integrity. The dishonesties which have become monumental will be swept away by any cataclysm that forces us to redirect our energies in a constructive direction. So we have now to decide who is going to lead us, whether we want to depend upon the prophets of old or put all our faith and hope in a bank book. We want to know whether in our own lives the end of life is to be achieved by improvement of character or by the size of the estate which we leave behind us. Well, of course, the problem of the estate is already under considerable stress, and in the course of time, our mistakes will probably result in bankruptcy for most people because they will not be able to maintain evil without tremendous extravagance. The only way the Romans could prevent the Huns and the Goths and the Visigoths from moving in on Rome was to bribe them to stay away. Now we are bribing an emergency to stay away from us by simply spending vast sums of money to build false barriers against confusion. It won't work. There's no solution lying in this direction. We will be bankrupt in the end, and the faults will still remain. The only answer is to get to work on the problem. If we had gone to one of the Sibyls of old, or one of the prophets, and stood before him, as Solomon stood before the prophet of Israel, he would tell us very simply what the matter is. He would say that our worries, fears, and the evidences that hurt us, disturb us today, are simply handwriting on the wall of heaven. We are being weighed in the balance, and we are definitely being found wanting. That's the trouble, wanting too much. We have sacrificed the values which should have made us a great people. Now we're still here, and therefore there's always time for improvement. The individual has a certain span here. And nature, in its curious wisdom, has built the length of the human life as a final proof of the fallacy of physical ambition. But the individual says, as Mussolini is reported to have said, that he would rather live a few years as a lion than a long life as a lamb. Well, he got his wish. And along with him, Hitler got the same treatment. Always the tyrant, the dictator, the selfish individual, even though he may do some good and could have been a great value to his people, became ambitious, overly ambitious, and feeling himself to be a person of destiny, took upon himself the destruction of his world. Now we have these two problems then that we have to face, namely, that we are either going to be able to restore the city of God in our world, or else we're going to have a very hard winter with the city of Babylon. And the Babylon means confusion. And if you can think of anything more confusing than 1983, it's a very, very difficult thing to think about. There is practically nothing that is not tied up in knots. And all these knots are man-made. And everyone is fighting desperately to make certain that no one unties the knots. because to do so is to damage somebody's ambitions and somebody's glory and reputation. So we have the problem always, as we've had it in the past, that something has to gradually happen. We are getting to the point now where it had better happen. And we are not in a political position to do too much about it, but we can accomplish a great deal in other ways. One thing we can try very hard to do now is to make our own personal lives constructive, that we can definitely, even at a certain expense to our own pocketbooks, decide to try and be straight and honest, that we will not take unfair advantage, that we will not overcharge and overprice, that we will not shoddy our goods. And if by any chance we happen to own an apartment house, we're not going to double the rentals just because other people do. We're going to try to be fair about things. We are not going to consider the importance of luxury as more valuable than integrity. The strange problem that we see today is that the average person around us, and the religious person, is in a disaster and a dilemma. Wish we could get back again to the days when the great temples shadowed the walks of Athens or Alexandria. We have no great leading spiritual institution that works, that has greater power than political policy, and is free from all selfishness and self-centered arrogance. We do not have a place of security where the young can go for enlightenment and receive the truth. We are unable to find the institution which, as older people, we can know is dependable and which will survive us and protect the future for our children and their children. There is no center of integrities that is stronger than human selfishness. This being the case, something has to be done about it. And the way that it has to be done is, as always in these matters, is finally to realize that the voice of the people is the voice of God. When enough persons wake up to the facts of life, these facts will lead us to the changes that are necessary. In the meantime, additional integrities of our own, the acceptance of responsibilities, which we are now trying to avoid, the recognition that we must share life with other people honestly and fairly, and that if it becomes necessary for us to decide between integrity and luxury, we will choose integrity. There is no need for the individual to cater to every appetite that he has. There is no need for him to be jealous of everyone who has more than himself. The problem of each person is to find integrity in himself, peace and security in his own heart and soul. And if society cannot provide it for him, then he must provide it for himself. This perhaps is a principle that is mentioned or thought of in the works of Plato. Plato sort of comes to the conclusion that man is no longer attended by a series of celestial babysitters. He is no longer being guarded, guided, and chastised on the moment that he makes a break or makes a mistake. He is not going to be completely cuddled and coddled by a divine power that will do his thinking for him and will protect him in all of the affairs of life, regardless of how he lives, and at the end of his life will take him, virtuous or sin-ridden, into his arms and forgive him all things. This type of thinking is no longer conceivable as part of a way of life. We are here in this dilemma, perhaps because of our individualistic potential. We are here because it is now possible for the human being to correct himself. It is no longer necessary for him to make the mistakes of his ancestors, because he can see what is happening. In the last 10 years, he has seen most of the mistakes which he still continues to make come to grief. He's able to see a world that is burdened by the fact that everybody is thinking only of themselves. And also that in addition to the major problems, there are all kinds of little problems which are gravitating against integrity. The weakening of home structure, for example, is contributing to the delinquency of the young. And the only answer to that problem is that you cannot be a delinquent family and then punish a child into morality. The child who has proper home life will be the one who has the courage to do things better. But it not only takes dedication, affection, and kindness, but thoughtfulness and integrity upon the part of the parents. All these things have to be done. Now we say, well, maybe we can't live to see it done. We won't be here that long. Well, nature has provided us with another factor that is very important, and which seems to me to be one of the essences of the whole situation, and that is the doctrine of rebirth, reincarnation. Reincarnation is a law of nature, and it exists for one simple reason, that no individual can become perfect in one life. It is impossible for the individual to move from a relative state of ignorance to an absolute state of wisdom in the course of 60, 70, or 80 years. It may be that in the past he has come part of the way and therefore will make a longer step now. But it also is inevitable that we must extend all processes of growth and unfoldment into the future. If we want to have this life that is better, if we want to build gradually for the perfection that is possible to mankind, we have to develop a long-range philosophy. We have to say, I will do the best I can today. I will make as little bad karma as possible now. And when faced with problems, I will try to solve them now. I will not avoid them or evade them in the hope that they will disappear. All the way along, we will try to be honest today, straight today, and follow today the rules and laws that have been given to us by the wise of all ages. If we succeed in doing this, we will probably drop out of embodiment without having achieved everything. Maybe just one little step we have made that will be permanent. But we are citizens of eternity. And the wisdom or gain and spiritual integrities which we make now become part of a great background of faith and truth which we carry into the future. If we become better today, the world is better tomorrow. If we are able to go out of this life with a higher standard of integrity than we came into it, then the next generation or the next time we return, we will help to build a better world than the one we have now. The great problem of all of this, of course, has always been the same, namely the domination of the immanent over the eminent. We have been so desperately desirous of having all that we want now that we are content to become materialistic in a universe where materialism does not actually exist, and that no amount of atheism or intellectualism can destroy one fragment of the great integrities of life. So we have on one hand a code that has come down to us from the past, perpetuated by some of the world's noblest thinkers. And we have on the other hand a concept that has developed among ourselves, perhaps beginning under a buttonwood tree in Lower Manhattan, that everything ultimately depends upon a vast industrialization of humanity. That the important thing here and now is progress, and that progress is going to be measured in larger computers, but there's nothing really to do with the individual except the discipline of learning to run a computer. Little by little, we are going to lose more and more of our humanity. We are going to depend completely upon devices which ultimately will magnify our unemployment beyond all reasonable bounds. Every contribution of science today to industrial development means less people working. We are now planning to take mankind away from the lathe, away from the assembly line, and all these things. we are going to also do the problem of trying to curb in some way an over-labor market, but which cannot be controlled by any of the methods we're using at the present time. Unless the individual wishes to make a grand program of birth control, we are going to continue to increase. We're going to have more and more people. The more people we have, the more we have to share and the more we have to live together. And if we have enough people and we have to share with enough of them and live together without destroying them, we may almost fulfill some of the better predictions of Isaiah, that there are solutions. There are solutions. This earth can take on upon itself many more people than are on it today, many more, if these people are honest, sincere, and dedicated to the common advancement of mankind. But we're going to have one desperation after another if each citizen thinks only of making an additional profit off of the losses to his neighbor. So we have this type of profit now, and we have predictions on it. We have a profit about how we're going to cut down overhead, how we're going to create better mass production, how we're going to sell machinery to undeveloped countries in order that they can go and become developed and compete with us. We are going to arm the world and feel perfectly happy about the employment that armament construction involves. It's a job for most people. All these things are part of an economic materialism based upon scientific materialism to a large degree, supported by economic and educational materialism, which is intended primarily to support and fulfill the labor needs of material institutions in science and industry. In other words, we want to create more and more people who will advance the projects of material progress and will continue to struggle and fight and labor and die as they have for ages. This type of prophecy, this prophecy that we can beat the economic situation, that great prosperity lies around the corner, is simply foolish. It does not lie beyond around the corner. The individual must create the situation that is necessary or it will never come. He must realize that nature intends mankind to be one large, happy family, and that all effort to grow and improve by taking it away from somebody else is ultimately a mistake. So the great chambers and books and columns and commentators that we hear every day are the new prophets. They are the ones who tell us about this and about that. For the most part, however, they're rather pessimistic at the moment. But the prophets of Israel were pessimistic most of the time, because there was always the conflict between the truth and the ambitions of princes. Today is the difference between the truth and the economical ambitions of individuals to whom wealth is the final answer to everything. Yet with all that, how this can be with the person facing life as he must is unbelievable. There is something that is a trace of congenital moronity that's in here somewhere. How a person can be happy and satisfied to build a fortune and then die of a stroke in the midst of it is just hard to understand. It is not scientific. It is not economic. The idea of this vast wealth being distributed among a group of spoiled children is no more intelligent. And the possibility of dedicating this wealth to institutions which are the cause of the trouble doesn't get us far either. We leave a vast fortune to some institution to build a larger nuclear unit is no better than imbecility. So in all these things, we are simply foolish. How can we claim to be grown up, mature people, with some sense of values, some intelligence presumably functioning in us and make such stupid decisions. To look at everything in the face and see nothing. To be in the presence of a world that needs the best of us, and we keep on giving them the worst. So we have conferences, we have leagues, we have all kinds of institutions to peace, to create peace. And what happens? The delegates tell us very frankly that they are in a position where they must defend the political structures of their own countries. And these structures are in conflict with other countries and more in conflict with common sense. So nothing gets accomplished. We need to get down to the realization of the Pythagorean unification of knowledge. We have to bring things that are valuable together so they will not war with each other. What we need is a realization of one world religion that is free from theological absurdities, but based upon a philosophical, spiritual contemplation of the actual operation of universal law. Universal law, as we call it, is divine law. And only that law which is actual and eternal and unchangeable by man is important. In a scientific institution, we have a constant investigation of the various manifestations of universal life. We know, for instance, beyond any question of doubt, how the human body functions. We also know that whatever brought this function into a pattern and gave it domination and made it possible for us to use it has a wisdom beyond comprehension by us. We are not even able to understand one cell in this structure, where it came from or why it's there. We have no idea what the various parts of our own bodies believe, think, or know. We assume they believe, think, or know nothing. And this may be a grave error, because every once in a while we make some of these little bodies mad and they can make us awful sick. We have got to keep rules. And it is the duty of science to find the rules that are necessary for the greater good of the greater number and to teach and actually practice these rules. It is the duty of religion to unite in creating hope, in strengthening faith, and giving the individual the internal value, power, the strength to enable him to live a good life. And it is the proper job of economics and the material side of things to provide the individual with the means of his own maintenance of health and shelter and food and protection that he needs. That it is the part of the material world to make sure that the individual's physical life is as healthy as possible. It is not the purpose of any of these to get rich off of its own kind or of any other kind. We are not supposed to be here to provide shelter on the basis of how much each house pays the contractor. As long as this is done, there will be the homeless. As long as personal physical gain is placed above material, between moral and ethical progress, whereas we have in trouble now, we'll be more so, because we are still working against the divine plan, and no one who works against it will succeed. It's about time to wake up, not only here, but everywhere. India, China, Russia, Korea, all the countries of Europe and Latin America, after all, are made up of human beings striving to live, trying to survive the corruptions of their leaderships, the ignorance in themselves, and the lack of faith in each other. This type of thing is basic. It is far more basic than any of the specialized fields of learning that we are now maintaining so carefully. We all have a right to know enough to take care of ourselves constructively. And also, in that knowledge, receive the instruction by which it becomes possible to take care of ourselves without injuring anyone else. Until we get these type of things, our prophecies are going to be very poor. So the modern prophets tell us how much we can put in the bank. They tell us how much we can make by investment and all this type of thing. And within reason and within the proper proprieties of life, organization of physical resources and physical problems is necessary. On the other hand, all of the use of that which we have, all of the goal of our lives should be above the material level that we know. We may have to have certain material assets in order to function, but our function should be to rise above these assets and use the privileges that have been given to us for the advancement of society. Those who have more should do more for the common good. If they can think this way and build this way, we can get some other points of view across to people. So we have to now listen to the ticker tape for our guidance, or else listen to the sages of the past. We can either build upon a material situation that is falling apart more rapidly than we can control it, or go back again to the basic principles upon which mankind has functioned. Principles which have been perpetuated through the ages, but with some distortions, and these distortions must be corrected. We must not mistake religion and theology. They are not the same thing. We must not confuse the purposes of science. For the purpose, final purpose of science is not to advance knowledge, but to improve life. And that improvement of life means that the scientist must be a priest as well as a scholar. He must be dedicated to the improvement of humanity and not to the advancement of an economic or industrial monopoly. All of these errors have to be corrected basically. Now, we can start and do it as soon as we become aware of this fact. We can do it pretty soon. We can all work at it a little every day. If we work at it a little every day, we will go out of this life with a better hope, because we will have a better understanding of the life we're living now. And furthermore, we will realize that what we have stored up in the form of grace within ourselves, what we have learned through experience, the love we have grown to appreciate and value, and the honesty which has become a part of our own constitution, all these values go on. And in the future of things, the world we are going to live in is going to be the result of what we do now to improve the present state of mankind. It is a very important time in our lives. It is a time in which we must select our leaderships, whether we are going to be led by the truths of the ages or led by the ambitions of selfish people today. We cannot necessarily change them, but we can understand the facts and keep our own characters as clean as possible and build as much to the much that we can possibly build of better daily existence. We can get over our animosities and our prejudices. We can get over our jealousies and our conceits. We can gradually learn to admire and respect other people. We can get over all of these little things which nag and persecute us from the time we are born. And little by little, there will emerge from this struggle what might be termed the human being. The human being is in the making, but he is not perfected yet. And at the moment, he does not seem he's going to rush into perfection in the near future. What he's going to have to do in the near future and now is to recognize that he grows a little by degrees, that every good thought adds to what he is, and every poor thought delays his own development. So little by little, getting to understand himself and his world, and going back to the old prophets and moderating his present prophet system, he is apt to come along a little better than he has in the past. And with those kind words, I think our time is up.